Welcome to the Pine Talk, episode 9. Take a look at your clock, your pine time, and pour a glass of wine, because, knock knock, who's there? Gnu. Gnu who? Gnu no who?
I am Peter, just a family guy.
And I am Ezra, content creator who forgets to create content. I'm working on it. I'm available on YouTube and Odyssey under the name Eletronion. Links in the description to both our channels.
And welcome to the 9th episode of Pine Talk,
the podcast for the Pine64 community by members of the Pine64 community.
In this episode, we'll be discussing two conferences that recently happened: the May Pine64 community update, some more community news, as well as going through some of your questions and feedback. But first, what have we been up to lately?
I'm still working on my point-and-click adventure game. It's going forward. I'm having actually a lot of hard time with it, but I'm hoping that I can release it for... Well, I'm going to release it June 22nd, no matter what happens. So I just want to get as much things done with that. On something more relevant, you mentioned that two conferences happened. I participated in one of them. I was virtually at the Linux App Summit. I wasn't there for the entire thing. It spanned 3 days. But I saw a few of the talks, and they were really interesting, and we'll talk about that later. What about you, Peter? What have you been up to?
Well, I was quite busy with visiting family, so I didn't manage to attend any conferences, sadly, but I've tried to follow up since. Mm-hmm. And I've only managed to post my weekly updates called LinBits on linmob.net, the weekly update about all things Linux phones, and to post the past progress of linmob apps and a glimpse in the future of what I call linuxphoneapps.org, which also is now on Twitter at linuxphoneapp. Do follow if you like. So I've written up something, but I need more input, and I linked some pads in the post that I made, but they didn't get much love yet. So if you have any feedback, maybe contribute there or send me an email, get in touch on social media. That would be nice. And even if there's nothing and you think, well, that's all perfect what you're thinking about, that's going to work like this, tell me that, because that would help too. But enough about me and my stupid projects. Let's get to it now and deal with a new segment we've introduced. And that is App of the Episode. So yeah, somehow more of the same, right? Mm. And my first pick... And the pick for this episode would be Aggregor Browser. Aggregor Browser is a minimal web browser for the distributed web, based on Electron and thus on Chromium. It supports protocols like the HyperCore protocol, among others. And while I really don't have any experience and only little knowledge about this, it's cool to have done something like this on the Pine phone now. We'll also link a talk by the project's author, Ranger Morph, about Aggregor Browser that should explain why this is great, better than I ever could.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to see it myself.
Yeah, and speaking of apps, let's talk about what you have been experiencing at the Linux App Summit.
Yes, so it was very interesting. First thing I can tell you that I experienced is that a lot of people could benefit from a better microphone. that aside, there was a lot of valuable information that was spread and things that I can benefit from. The various things I heard at the Linux App Summit, creating a community. They were talking, I forget who exactly, I should have probably wrote that down, but in general, there was a group of people talking about how to start a community in the open source or FOSS world, free and open source software world. I thought this was kind of interesting. They mentioned to not make another distribution or a package manager. Like, you know, we have enough of those and they work very well. So it might be better to contribute to existing ones than to just create your own. I mean, of course, create one if you want to, but, you know, don't necessarily expect to stand out if you're not doing anything different. If you're just another package manager, you know, doing nothing different. You need to solve a unique problem, big or small. If you have a passion, others will follow. You can start a community by picking up an old or dead project and give it new life, kind of like what UbiPorts did to Ubuntu Touch. Right? So you don't have to start from zero. You can pick up a project that others just are like, you know, if you find something old and you're like, oh, nobody's contributed to this for like months or years, and you're like, well, I think it's interesting and it's outdated now, but, you know, you update it, you make sure it's all good and new, and you start a whole new thing with it. And, you know, you're not alone. Other people are going to share in those problems. Picking up the pace here, there's forcing hardware vendors to care about Linux since 2015 by Richard Hughes, which I had a, this was the more technical of the talks that I partaked in, that I listened to. I didn't understand everything that he was saying, but for the most part, he was talking about firmware and how, you know, a lot of times if you wanted to update the firmware of certain things, that it would require some Windows executable or some thing that you just couldn't run on Linux or something like that. And so he wanted to find a way to get people to care about, or he was showing how to get people, companies, to care about supporting Linux. And he did so by, instead of just complaining to the company and being like, oh, well, you should like totally support Linux because we're important too, you have to go out of your way and build an ecosystem. Show, like make something that's actually useful, like a free product of sorts. He talked about the importance of being installed by default. So, like, you can imagine, like, a lot of people use the default web browser on their computer because it's installed, right? So you don't have to. It could be more important to aim for that kind of a goal. You want to build something that solves a problem. That's a lot like the community thing, and I think that just goes for anything. You know, if you're not doing anything useful, but it was interesting. It was interesting to see how he was talking about a kind of indirect way to get people to care about Linux.
Yeah, I just looked him up. I think he's one of the people that definitely are involved with, and maybe he was even involved with starting the firmware update project.
Well, thank you, Richard. We appreciate your efforts and your knowledge that you get to now share. So I definitely have to listen to his talk again to fully understand it.
Yeah, that stuff is quite intense.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have another point here where he was mentioning that you need to create things that are designed not to be cloned, but like, I have nothing to say about it because I didn't understand. Yeah. So I just feel a bit like an idiot, but I'll listen to it again. It seemed really interesting. The next talk that I have listed here is Adaptive Apps, The Future Is Now, by Tobias Bernard. He talked about GDK4 and all the awesome things that GDK4 does. I love GDK4. It's going to be so cool. And anyway, he talks about I just like his, I don't know, the way he was talking about it, he made it seem so GDK4 and the dynamic apps, adaptive apps, right? The idea that you literally have the same app on your desktop as on your phone, line per line. It's not a port, it's literally the same app, and it just adapts to whatever screen resolution you have, I think is really useful. And it's even useful on a desktop, because, like, if you want to, like, make your app a super small square in the corner of your screen, well, it'll still be usable, right? So I thought it was really cool, and that's pretty much what he talks about. He talks about GDK 4 and the new things it can do. It can do 3D transforms, so kind of like on the web with CSS, a 3D transform. And he showcased it by showing this 3D FPS kind of a demo where you could walk around some 3D environment that was built out of various icons. I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool.
He showcased nifty effects that you can do now. You can click on the light and dark theme, and there's a little effect that I think he said he thinks it's made with shaders. But nonetheless, there's a lot of sweet animations and widget logic so that things can be stacked differently depending on the adaptive nature. So maybe you have three bars next to each other, but when it's compressed, they'll be over each other. Anyway. It's cool. And finally, the one I was actually looking the most forward to is funding Krita. As soon as I saw that in the schedule for the Linux App Summit, it was like the one I wanted to see, because I'm always curious on how these software stay afloat. You know, are they doing it all for free, or do they actually, you know, get paid doing it? And Krita obviously gets paid doing it, and they have enough money to support multiple developers, which is really nice. And the talk by Hala Remt, if I'm saying that correctly, was super insightful, very enlightening, absolutely inspiring. He talked about how multiple times they used Kickstarter, and how a lot of their Kickstarter clicks, like people going to their Kickstarter, came from YouTube, which was interesting. They talked about how Krita is available on Steam for a price, which I think was very interesting, because I had a similar idea myself, but with like open source games, that, you know, you can obviously like compile and ship your game with Steam and use Steam's stuff, but like have a free version that doesn't rely on Steam on the side too, or just have the source code available. Like, and just, like, it's a hassle to compile things sometimes. So what you're really selling is the work of compiling it. Right. So they had a few issues with it not being up to date, but when it is up to date, it works, you know, flawlessly. And they also put it on other things too. They talk about the whole story behind it, but put simply, they also put it on the Windows Store, which, as much as people say it's dead, still is raking them in a decent amount of cash flow, which is always fantastic.
Yeah. And it's just a tiny fraction of the giant Windows install base uses that store and buys Krita there.
Exactly.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
For an open source project.
100% for sure, for sure. Otherwise, they try to include, they do fundraisers and accept donations, of course, like most other projects. But it's really interesting and cool to see what they do. They say that they were inspired by Blender for a few of the things they've done. And I definitely think more projects should try to experiment and see how else they can make money. It's always very interesting to see, and you're not really, I don't think you're losing by trying. You're spending a bit of time, but I think it's really good. He said also the importance of having an accountant. So that's also something to note. So yeah, in conclusion, all the talks were very, very informative, right? So, you know, you don't have to watch all of them. I didn't. I didn't have time, and also wasn't necessarily interested in everything that was said, but that's just me. So, like, find some things that you think are interesting, like the adaptive apps or how Krita makes money, and listen to it. I think it's worth your time to hear what they have to say. And these are, like, you know, the big players, so to say, you know.
Yeah.
They know. They've been around the block, so see what you can learn from them. I enjoyed my time, and it was really cool. And I'm happy everybody who sponsored the event did, which includes Pine 64.
Yeah. Great. I think we'll link the schedule of the conference and the talks, the recordings of the talks you talked about, and maybe the general YouTube channel in our show notes, and so that people can follow up on this.
Awesome.
Good. So I will talk about the other conference that took place the same weekend, and that is AlpineConf. It's the first ever AlpineConf, and it was, of course, a virtual event. As you may know, PostMarketOS is based on Alpine Linux, and thus there were three amazing talks by members of the PostMarketOS community on various topics, which you should all watch as far as I'm concerned. The first one is by Oliver Smith. That's Ollie Paranoid, the guy who initiated the PostMarketOS project, about PM Bootstrap, the Swiss Army knife of PostMarketOS development. I think I talked about PM Bootstrap a bit in a previous episode, and I think it's, while it doesn't adhere to the Unix philosophy, arguably, is an amazing tool because it can do so much, you know, like build packages and so on. So watch that talk. It's about an hour long and still totally worth it. Then something that maybe less exciting to some of you, because if you have a Pine phone, you may know some of this, but still a good wrap-up by Martin Bram, a showing of PostMarketOS, where he shows the various user interfaces on multiple devices. And then another one by the SXMO people on Simple X Mobile, a minimalist environment for Linux smartphones. And that one really blew my mind, a great demo, and they were so good at using it. You know, I'll never get that good at using SXMO, honestly. But yeah, we'll have links to the recordings, including the big blue button room recordings, which contains the Q&As and the conference itself, in the show notes.
Oh, I definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
So, will. Now, the community update.
Yes.
Title, Connection Established. So, Ezra, why don't you start with the Pine Time news?
The Pine Time. There's a big interest in the Pine Time following 1.0, the launch blog. More Pine Times will be available in June and will feature Infinitime 1.0 installed by default. Many pull requests are waiting to be merged. There's a new version of Siglo and improvements to Pine Time support in GadgetBridge. And this was like right before we started recording. Siglo just released a new update, and you tried it out, Peter?
Yeah, I did, and it has quite some improvements to the UI, so it's definitely quite a bit better now. Not that it was bad before, but you know, there's good and there's better, and this is better.
I think
looks like some of these pull requests have been merged and released.
I think Siglo has an excellent development flow. Like as you say, like Siglo works and worked before, and that's what's most important. And all these new fancy icons have not deteriorated that experience. If anything, it's made it better. And that's exactly, I think, what an update should do.
Definitely. So,
good job, Siglo.
Yeah. By the way, I think Martin Bram was involved in that too. So it's always the same names.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go over to the PinePhone. So the big news that, well, maybe will take some pressure out of you is that rolling production of the PinePhone started. So the idea is that you can order it any day or any month this year, and they will be shipped out once a month, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just order them and they will be available. So it's not like it was before, like, oh, they're all sold out now. And then I saw these people on Twitter that were like, oh my God, sold out. When will they be back? And then the PinePhone was briefly back with the next community edition, mm-hmm. and then was gone again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's apparently not supposed to happen again. Also, on tangential note, Lukas wrote a blog post, guest post on linuxsmartphones.com. In Linux Smartphones We Trust, you should read that maybe. It's quite an interesting read. Then let's go to the accessories. There's a close look at the PinePhone keyboard internals in this update, and they are now having internal review in units, and some have been shipped out to developers. Martin Bram again has shared some impressions on YouTube, so watch that video. We won't summarize it because, well, it's just a short video. Just watch it and you'll see something that's maybe more helpful than listening to me rambling on about this. It will be shipped to us, not mere mortals, later this summer. Before that, wireless charging and LoRa back cases for the PinePhone will be available in June. Then megapixels 1.0 got well-deserved mention, but we talked about that in the last episode already. And the PinePhone firmware work is progressing, including work on voice over LTE. But a little more on that later, maybe. So now the PineBook Pro.
The Fedora 34 in Manjaro with GNOME for the BPP. That's hard to say. PBP. I'm just going to say the PineBook Pro. So yeah, Fedora 34 and Manjaro with GNOME are now available for the PineBook Pro. So we'll have links to that in the show notes. Peter is looking forward to trying Fedora on his
yes!
Pro 64.
I am.
It's going to be cool. I run Fedora on everything that I use so far, so it's going to be cool to have it on yet another device, the ROC Pro.
Yeah, on ARM. I mean, I don't think I'm running... I have run Fedora on... Well, I've run it on my PinePhone, but, you know, on another ARM device yet. Mm. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to seeing stuff about it from you. The production of the PinePhone Pro has been placed on halt due to component shortages. Pine64 will keep you updated. If you want a PinePhone Pro, now is the time to pick one up. We'll, I guess, talk about it maybe next episode too, to tell you if you guys already bought everything, which you probably would have.
Yeah, maybe. So it's really, there's no production plan for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you want one, get one now. Sad.
But sad. Yeah,
that's this component shortage. It's bad.
I gotta see if I can get one.
But still, some new products get launched, and one of these is the Quad 64. New hardware revisions are with developers currently, and unless something unforeseen happens, they will be available to developers in the Pine Store in June. So, regarding the general story of further shipments in large quantities, well, yeah, supply chain difficulties exist. And while a single board computer is certainly easier than a notebook or a tablet, yeah, it's all difficult in 2021. On the software side, for the Quad 64, there has been a lot of software progress regarding enabling the RK3566 chipset in Linux. Many patches have been submitted and some have already been accepted. Continuing with new stuff, LoRaWAN is a big topic lately in the Pine 64 community, and the Pine DO, that's the official name for the Pine 64 LoRa project, is expected to launch next month, including gateways and endnodes. So there's going to be those boxes, right? Mm-hmm. And the Pine DO, if you go on the wiki page, there's the LoRa gateway, which is going to be available in indoor and outdoor variants. It's basically A64 LTS, you know, so that OG board, basically, in its current iteration, and RAK2287 module, which is the LoRaWAN part, and that also has a GPS. RAK Wireless is kind of important, and Pine 64 announced a partnership with them in between the publication and production of our past episode. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to that. And connections have been made already, and I think that's where the title of this community update comes from. So, right.
But we have a few opinions on LoRaWAN that we should share, right?
We should.
I guess I'll go first. Low bandwidth, high range. Simple to understand, hard to master. There's about as much things that you can do with this technology as things you can't. I see potential in the Internet of Things world. Long-range smart devices that can just sit out in the wild with nothing but a battery pack. Like, truly random sensors just dotted around the world, drip-feeding data to their respective gateways. I imagine, for instance, a small battery-powered device with solar panels that would sit in the wild and maybe take a picture of anything that moved. And when it takes a picture, it could send it over LoRaWAN to the best available gateway, to which, through internet, would end up to my machine, saving a copy. If my maths aren't mistaken, the best case scenario, it would be that it would take about 10 seconds or so at 50 kilobits per second for a 640 by 480 JPEG that's about 56.3 kilobytes. Or in the worst case scenario, it should take approximately 2.6 days at 2 kilobits per second. So, you know, maybe it's not a good idea, but it is possible. And sure, you're clogging up the network a little bit, but I mean, who's going to get mad for that? But, you know, if you have a small amount of data, like let's say, I don't know, you wanted to analyze the entire ferility of an entire forest ground, then I suppose you could dot a matrix of sensors and just send like just small amounts of bytes of data, just small bits. But yeah, hopefully I haven't made any mistakes in my math for that. But long story short, I'd love to experiment with it myself physically. It sounds nifty. What about you, Peter? What do you think?
Yeah, like you just explained, I think it's exciting. And yeah, it's really low bandwidth. This is something we have to remember. So applications are necessarily limited and need to be cleverly engineered around this limitation. Like compressing on the node before it sends it out. Stuff like that. So personally, this limitation, as someone who likes the efficiency of all the computer software, seemingly had when they did much we do today with way less CPU cycles and memory. Think word processing, IRC, and plain text email. Makes me like this technology. So in a way, for me, that low bandwidth is what makes it exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you really need to be a bit smart.
Yeah.
To use this for more than just IoT. But even with IoT, you need to make sure that you are clever with how you send your data, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure, 100%. And speaking of limited technology being exciting, did you install that custom firmware onto your modem?
Yeah.
I think you managed to get that with absolutely no issues whatsoever.
Well, I did it. I did it before recording. You know, I was slacking off because I didn't want to prepare the show. but I wanted to get this done to finally talk about it. And the thing is, like this, I can't talk much about how well it works. I can tell it works. So I've received a call since, and I could call my other phone, you know, stuff like that. But I will talk a bit about the process of installing it, because I had a hard time doing this, you know. Because at first, I did not bother to set up Minicom correctly. And without having ADB set up, you can read Megi's website for how to do that. And good luck following his instructions. I'm not smart enough to do so. You need to use Minicom to send your phone's Quectel modem into fastboot mode, which you need to do in order to refresh it, because you refresh it like an Android phone via fastboot. I used a Manjaro Plasma Mobile dev build from SD card to do this, and fastboot is part of the Android tools package. Minicom is just Minicom, so you need those two installed, and you need to download, of course, the package.tar.gz from Victor GJ's repository, the release section. And I then disabled a phone service to make sure that the modem wasn't busy.
Mm-hmm.
So to configure Minicom, I followed the guide on bloggerbus.ca. So another fellow Canadian, maybe you know that person, Ezra. Canada is a small country, right? Oh no, not small, just sparsely inhibited. I had to go with another device name, TTY USB 2 instead of TTY USB 0, and so on. There was no prompt or anything in Minicom, so I figured, oh god, maybe it didn't work again. But then I realized I could type, so I typed AT at first, and then it gave positive response, and then I typed AT plus Q fastboot. And guess what? The Minicom connection stopped working soon after. But then I realized that the modem had switched into fastboot mode. And after that, I was able to follow the further instructions on the release page of Bitter GJ's project. And yeah, I had to use the fastboot flash raw command for one part where that's an option in this description. But yeah, this is all quite complicated, so I think I'll write a blog post on the topic, and if I manage to do this so before the release of this episode, you'll find it linked in the show notes of the episode. So, by the way, if you're watching this podcast as a video on YouTube, Odyssey, or Tilvitz, make sure to head over to pine64.org/pinetalk for the full show notes. They should be linked in the description of the video watching too, by the way. Just a quick reminder. And now let's come to community engagement.
Yeah.
And listener questions.
So our first question is by Blort, a friendly name in the community.
Yeah.
Blort at tube.technics.de on Tilvids. He says, now I really want to try Minecraft or Almond/Ada on my PinePhone, or rather on my server with the PinePhone as a client. P.S. When are you going, or when are we going to hear slash see more about the #PineCube, #PineTalk?
Well, personally, sadly, I didn't have much time for playing with the PineCube because I was so busy on testing Linux smartphone apps, and I was traveling and all that. Yeah. So yeah, I hope to get something done, but I can't promise to be able to say much more than this before the next episode is going to be recorded.
Yeah, sadly, I didn't use the PineCube that much either because of reasons and excuses, but I will. I do plan on trying it shortly, as soon as I can get my hands on a SD card. Since I only own two, it'd be nice to own a few more, and I can plop one in and try experimenting a little more. I want SD cards. That's my excuse. Anyway, but yeah, I'm going to try it out, and I have Peter to help me, you see, because he's already gotten up and working. I literally never booted the machine. So,
do much more than that.
He's an absolute pro, and you should ask him all your questions. Anyway, I do know that, so to answer your question, we'd probably talk about it in the next episode. Anyway, I'll do everything in my power to get mine up and running within the next 2 weeks so that I can talk about it and experiment with it and do things with it. And also your little idea about running Minecraft on a server that your PinePhone connects to, I think that's an absolutely fantastic idea. Really feel the power of your own central us network of awesomeness, you know? Be your own Google.
Spy on yourself.
Hashtag be your own Google.
Yeah, but that's great. I really look forward to you experimenting with the PineCube.
Yeah, I think it's going to be... I think it'll be cool. I'll try stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. Good, so next one by Racecake on YouTube. Have you guys thought about verified boot camp on PinePhone? I think this means just verified boot because boot camp is a Mac thing only, as far as I know. So, yeah, I put it into a search engine and I came up with the story for verified boot from ROM to user space on ARM. It's from 2017, and then there's this core boot and head stuff that some laptops have implemented. But seriously, I don't know much about this, and I don't even know whether the Allwinner A64 chip in the PinePhone has the necessary prerequisites to do this in a good way. So it's definitely something to look into, and if you're listening to this and you've experimented with verified boot on your PinePhone, please tell us about this and we are going to share your awesome story.
Heck yeah.
Or your sad fail.
That's awesome. If you feel like sharing,
I mean, that can happen, right? When you try stuff, you end up failing.
Yeah. Our next question is by Intra on YouTube.
Yeah.
Do either of you have your own channels that you post on? Well, we've had similar questions on about that topic we've talked about in the YouTube comments. Show notes on pine64.org should be linked in the video's description. But
my stuff is simple to find. It's all on linmob.net. That's linmob.net.
And I am Elatronion. That's Elatronion everywhere.
So simple.
So simple, I can't even believe people can't find me. You know? Anyway.
Yeah. And then there's one more, but I forgot to paste it in. But we will answer it anyway. And we won't edit this out because, well, it's fun.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Super.
And that question was, how about a FM radio back cover by Dion Dennis on YouTube? What do you think, Ezra? How about an FM radio back cover for the PinePhone? Would that even be possible?
I feel like you'd have a higher bandwidth than a LoRaWAN back cover. I mean, who would want that?
Yeah. Question is, I2C has the I2C bus enough bandwidth for that? I don't know. I really don't know.
Hmm. That's a good question.
How much does FM radio even need?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Maybe there's even FM radio hardware already in the phone, but it's not used.
Yeah.
Some simple dumb phones had FM radio back in the day, so I think might be a feature that could already be in the Quectel modem, but yeah, we would have to look that up. I did a quick search for it, but didn't find anything, but I think a more thorough search might lead to more. So if you know more about this, then please, again, tell us about your awesome findings. I know that some people used SDRs, like these, I think, Realtek SDR dongles on their Pine phones connected via USB to do stuff with FM radio, but an FM radio back cover would be something different, I think. Yeah. And basically just connecting a TV stick, TV USB dongle, wire USB, and then gluing it to the cover. So it should be something simpler. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's not even necessary because the modem could theoretically do that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you would need an antenna, and that might require extra wiring. So we don't know.
It'd be fun. And a back cover with a wire.
I will personally look into this if nobody gets in touch, and we will report on this next episode.
Awesome. If you are subscribed to our MP3 feed, check out the chapter markers. These can be handy if you vaguely remember something we may have talked about or said, and you want to find it again. Or if you want to find a segment, if you find a segment really boring and you can just, skip over it. Like my beautiful poems.
Yeah. Who would skip those poems?
I know, seriously. Nobody would. Everybody would want to skip to my poems.
Yeah.
Another first thing.
Okay, yeah, that's hard. But maybe they can skip back and then re-listen.
Yeah.
Whatever. If you don't need these chapter markers, save them bandwidth and use my beloved Opus version, the only version of this podcast that could possibly be sent over LoRaWAN in a couple of days. Once more, a huge thanks to Nerdsum Media for being our awesome audio producers.
Thank you. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Remember, this is a community podcast, so please leave feedback on what we should do better. Get your suggestions in and feel free to ask questions. We're really close to running out of questions again. We have some left, but some of them require full episode to answer them. So if you've little things you'd like to know about or just know our opinion on, please do ask them.
You can join the Discord channel, Pine Talk Podcast, on Pine64's Discord, obviously. You can send us an email at pinetalk@pine64.org and tweet at us. We're at TalkPine. We're also available on Mastodon. We're at talkpine@fostodon.org. If you can't remember these names, just use the hashtag AskPineTalk.
That's a good idea. Please do that. And last minute spoilers, we will have another interview in the next episode, so you've got something to look forward to.
Ooh.
Yeah. So have a great time, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.